Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Mouth of Fire by A. Trey McMacken, narrated by Peter Noble. 1. A New Shame. The shrieks and howls of the Ursi drilled into Corin's ears. He felt a heavy blow on his shield, jarring his arm. A rock fell away, clattering against the stone underfoot. They're throwing rocks now. Corin had never seen Ursi before, and now their fangs and grey skin and stench filled his mind. His spear was as yet unblooded, and his axe hung at his heavy belt. He found himself jostled toward the center of the ring, or he withdrew there himself, he wasn't sure. His heart thumped, and the world spun around him in frenzied display, giving him no choice in the matter. "Someone get down there!" the prince shouted, pointing toward the base of the hill where two dwarves lay on the rock. It was Hefter and Coldhammer. Coldhammer was motionless, and a flint spear stuck out from his side. Blood trickled down the sloping stone beneath him. Huddled up against the body was Hefter, curling as much as he could beneath his round shield, his right leg protruding uselessly, twisted at an unnatural angle. Corin could see his panicked breaths. Another Ursi rushed for Hefter, and another slew of stones flew. One cracked against its skull, and the beast fell. Dwarves crouched, grabbing wildly for new slingstones, as two more Ursi rushed for Hefter. "Not all at once!" the prince shouted. Dark blood stained the prince's hauberk. It wasn't his own. Just in front of Corin, Meadsong raised a hand axe and threw. It was a magnificent throw at 15 yards, and the Ursi in the lead fell, tripping the one behind. More stones found their marks and kept it down. With a clamor of shrieks, a rush of Ursi poured down the hillside from above, slamming into the spear wall. A shudder ran through the line of dwarves, but they held, spears slamming forward and back. One Ursi leapt up as it reached the dwarves, but a shield rose and slammed into its legs, sending it flipping into the ring. It hit the ground head first, only a few feet away from Corin, and was dispatched by a spear before Corin even managed to move. The dwarves fought in silence, their breaths puffing through gritted teeth. Corin stood and watched, one of the only dwarves not engaged and exposed in the shield ring. His arms shook so badly he clutched them against his chest. "Do something," he thought. But he didn't know what. The dwarven spear points repulsed the fresh surge of Ursi. Prince Firehelm looked around, gasping for breath. His gaze fell on Hefter past the far side of the ring, still trembling and alone. The guards had been struggling to make it up the hill on the double when the Ursi attacked, and in the chaos, the two wounded dwarves had been left behind. "Someone get him!" the prince called. No one moved. The warriors looked over at each other. And then Prince Firehelm's eyes fell on Corin, standing within the ring, behind the rear arc of warriors. "You go now!" Corin stared at him, mouth agape. Firehelm looked back up the hill. The Ursi gathered for another charge. Few of the creatures risked rushing up from below beneath the rocks of the slingers, but each time they slammed into the ring from above, it felt as if the dwarves would break apart. "Drop your weapons and drag him back!" the prince shouted at Corin again. "Move, fool," Corin thought to himself. His arms in tremor, he managed to open his fingers and drop his spear. It wasn't easy. He'd been grasping the haft for hours. He pulled his arm out of his shield and looked down at Hefter. "We'll be ready," said Meadsong, grabbing Corin by the shoulder and pulling him forward. Half the warriors on this side of the line had set down their spears and worked their slings, trying to protect Hefta and keep the ring formed at the same time. To break the ring and expose anyone's back would be to invite the Ursi in for the kill.
Go, run!
Midsong pushed Corin, and he nearly lost his balance. He staggered, then rushed forward down the slope. As soon as he left the ring, the Ursi saw him. They burst from the trees beyond in a sprint, some heading toward Hefta, and some with their eyes locked on Corin. Halfway to Hefta was a boulder, and Corin angled toward it, slamming into it with his hands to stop himself. He fumbled at his belt, yanking at his hand axe. Stones whistled overhead, and Ursi shrieked,
"Go! Go!"
He heard yells from above. He looked up. The faces of his comrades stared down, some angry, some focused on arming, slings whipping at their sides. He looked at Hefta, still yards away.
Do something, do something, do something!
His axe was free, but he didn't move. He looked around the boulder. More Ursi broke from the trees.
Shaking hand!
He heard Midsong yell. Corin looked up. A wave of Ursi poured down the hill, and some of the slingers turned to aid the other side, where the prince braced with spear and shield to receive the impact. Others looked back and forth, unsure which part of the ring to defend.
Now or die!
Midsong shouted. Somehow, Corin moved. He jumped around the boulder and threw his axe wildly. At what, he didn't know. He half-jumped, half-sprinted the last few yards.
I'm dead! I'm dead! I'm dead! I'm dead!
Hefta screamed when Corin grabbed him under the armpits. His eyes looked more white than brown as he twisted to see what had grabbed him. Corin pulled back, but Hefta barely budged. The wounded dwarf yelled again, this time in pain.
How am I going to do this?
Corin shuffled his feet for better placement. An Ursi shrieked, and he looked up to see its flailing body falling toward him. A stone-shaped hole caved into its brow.
Pull, pull! I'm dead! Pull!
He had to pee so badly. They were 2 yards past the body of Coldhammer. Corin looked up to see 4 Ursi charging. A stone struck one, and it stumbled, but 3 came on. At that moment, Corin urinated as he heaved Hefta back. He slipped on the stones and went down to 1 knee. 2 of the Ursi stopped, grabbing Coldhammer's motionless legs and pulling the limp body toward the trees. The last Ursi came on, spittle flecking its mouth. Corin turned a shoulder, preparing for the impact, but a spear rose and stabbed into the Ursi's chest. The creature's eyes widened. It recoiled back, fell, and rolled down the hillside. It was Hefta. He'd kept his spear and had thrust the Ursi through. Corin heaved again, up the hill, 1 impossible backward step at a time. He heard shouting behind him. He looked and saw the battle above.
Step, drag, step, drag, step, drag.
Hands grabbed him and pulled him back. He fell into the ring of warriors, even as a rush of Ursi poured around the flanks.
Move forward!
It was the prince's voice. 2 other dwarves had taken Hefta under the armpits between them, and the ring closed in to fill the gaps. The warriors moved up the hill, step by step, keeping to their formation, spears jabbing at any Ursi that dared come close. Corin crawled forward on hands and knees, and then scrabbled to his feet.
Shield, spear.
He couldn't see them, and now the company had moved past where he'd dropped them. He reached down for his axe.
Oh, yes. He'd thrown it. At what?
The press of Ursi lessened, wary of the moving dwarves with their long, biting spears. Some Ursi javelins flew at them, but the flint tips could rarely pierce. Unless the Ursi javelins found a gap, the rocks the Ursi threw were more dangerous. So the dwarves stood shoulder to shoulder, shields firm.
The ring distorted over the rough hillside, but they did not break, and the Ursi did not rush again. Corin glanced back down the hill. There was no sign of Coldhammer, except his bright blood left on the rocks. The last 10 yards were the roughest. Their formation stretched and pulled as dwarves scrambled over the broken rock. Bits of gravel skidded down the hill from underfoot. Then Prince Firehelm led them over the crest and onto a level shelf of rock. The Ursi retreated and watched from a distance, huddled behind pine and spruce trees along the ridge. The shelf was a massive outcrop of basalt, jutting out of the ridge about 20 yards from the top. Where the intrusion pierced into the ridge, it formed a depression in its side. Within it, a flattened rock face showed the rough scores of pick and chisel, and the obvious seams of a heavy stone door.
"Get it open!"
the prince said. Two dwarves rushed up to the door and grabbed a carved wooden post resting in a slot in the stone. They fitted it into a hole in the door and levered it back. The door grated open, revealing a narrow passage just large enough for a single dwarf to pass.
"In you go,"
Firehelm said, patting one of the nearby warriors on the shoulder.
"Tighten up!"
A cluster of Ursi, peeking from tree and rock to avoid the stones of the slingers, took up a chattering cry of annoyance as the dwarves filed into the tunnel. Corin entered near the middle of the line. No shield, no spear, no axe. He heaved a sigh of relief as he felt the stone engulf him, felt the cool dark of the adit. 10 yards into the ridge, the tunnel made a sharp turn, then widened beyond. Two of the lead warriors stopped and turned, readying their spears as the others came through the choke point. A chamber opened up another 5 yards in, rough-hewn with an uneven floor, but big enough to host 50 dwarves or more. The air was damp. The stone was not skillfully sealed. It was one of the advanced refuges of the Ridgewoods, and it was not made for comfort, but for utility. The Ridgewoods were the queen's scouts and warriors who guarded the valleys and ridges surrounding Icecloak. Such holes dotted the ridges below Hooked Gap, in case any of them should be surprised and cut off. The chamber was bare except for a few water casks and some mining tools. The last dwarf inside was Prince Firehelm. His face was flushed, his armor soaked in dark Ursi blood, his spear dripping, his shield marred. No Ursi rushed the entrance. Behind him, they swung and shut the stone door, jamming it from within. They were safe. Corin turned and walked toward the back of the chamber, away from the others that huddled around the prince. He sat down on the bare rock, holding his trembling arms close. It wasn't the battle. His arms always trembled, sometimes his head as well. They had trembled all his life. It was why everyone called him Shaking Hand. 4 months ago, while Illanferna, meaning Icecloak in the language of dwarves, lay buried beneath the grip of deep winter above stone, it had been announced that the prince would assemble his own warriors to combat the Ursi. It was no surprise. The prince had grown increasingly vocal about the need for more aggression in response to the springtime raids. His mother, Queen Jade, had granted his request to assemble a personal cadre. They came to be called the Prince's Guard. Approaching the prince was the hardest thing Corin had ever done. The prince had looked at his hands, seen the shaking, and then stared Corin straight in the eyes for a few long moments.
"What is your calling?"
he said.
"My calling?"
Corin asked. "What are you destined for?"
"I think to do whatever the mountain may require," he answered. "I wish to serve."
"Those who herd goats serve? Is that what you wish?"
"No."
"What then? What is it?"
"I wish for a chance at a name, a chance for something more, in service to Icecloak.
The prince smiled. Then join with me. For whoever is with me in the beginning and through the trials, their destiny will be great in our day of glory.
I may join.
You may join. The prince paused, looking him over once more. You may join. Come to the guardroom tomorrow night.
Corin was truly surprised. He had gone on the shred of a hope, expecting the prince to look at his hands and dismiss him.
Corin had gone to the guardroom as soon as he judged it might be considered tomorrow night. Now he sat in the dark, the only light a small patch of the blue-green miner's eye fungus colonizing the ceiling. His weapons were gone. His pants stank of urine. He was sure everyone could smell it, mixed in with the reek of Ursi blood and dwarven sweat that filled the chamber. Corin tried to focus on smelling the limestone instead, but it was no use. After a while, when everyone had caught their breath, the warriors separated into small groups. They pried open one of the water casks and set about cleaning blood from their weapons and armor, faces and hands. They whispered together quietly, a sound almost hidden by the rasp of honing stones on blades. Corin had no weapons to clean or sharpen. In fact, there was no blood on him either. He had killed nothing. Prince Firehelm and Pine Chin spoke together in low tones. They knelt next to Hefter. The injured dwarf placed the wooden handle of a knife between his teeth and nodded. The prince held Hefter down while Pine Chin grabbed his twisted leg and yanked it hard. Hefter screamed. Pine Chin pulled again. The handle slipped from Hefter's mouth. He'd passed out. Pine Chin felt the leg and nodded to Prince Firehelm. The prince stood up while Pine Chin hacked away sections of Hefter's spear haft with an axe and bound the sticks to the broken leg with strips of cloth. Hefter roused, moaning, and Prince Firehelm brought him water. All this Corin watched from the other side of the chamber, feeling only a sense of shame. Through the battle, the idea of being wounded or killed horrified him. But now, he would have rather been in Hefter's place.
"Listen to me, my warriors," Prince Firehelm said, walking to the center of the chamber.
All heads turned to him.
"Today we blooded our weapons for the first time. Coldhammer's death grieves us, but we did not come here to fear death. He died bravely. Tomorrow we venture out again. We will slaughter 100 Ursi in his name."
There were mutters of assent from the warriors. Corin's heart fell when the prince's eyes rested on him, alone near the back of the chamber. Firehelm hesitated a moment, allowing the attention of the others to wander. Then he seemed to make up his mind and walked over to Corin. As the prince neared, Corin saw the slight wrinkle of his nose, but no other reaction.
"Shit, shit," Corin thought.
There was no way to hide the smell of piss, not from a dwarf nose. But the prince came and crouched down on his heels next to Corin, side by side with their backs to the stone. They looked out at the rest of the chamber.
"You saved him," he said.
Corin didn't respond, even after a length of silence.
"You know One Hand?"
the prince asked.
Corin nodded. Of course he did. The old dwarf had worked with the prince to train these 27 new guards, 26 now, for the past 4 months. One Hand was too old to go over the stone himself, but he had fought at the Battle of Four Kings, had been near Brokenspear during the last charge. Brokenspear, the first king under the mountain, died a hero's death there to save the colony. The prince grinned slightly, leaned over toward Corin and whispered,
One hand pissed himself during the battle.
Corin's eyes widened.
What?
Told me himself, he said. Didn't stop him fighting.
The prince watched Corin, his green eyes nearly black in the low light. He had inherited his mother's eyes.
Your true problem, Shaking Hand, is that you shake in spirit.
The prince laid a hand on Corin's shoulder.
Let your spirit be firm, and your hands will be of little account.
Firehelm glanced at his own hand. The lambskin glove was covered in blood. His beard was normally the color of burnished bronze, but now it was dark and matted, clotted with the stinking Ursi blood.
Goodness, I need this filth off me. Come and let's clean off this battle. It was your first battle, not your last.
The prince rose and looked down at Corin, then nodded to the cask. He waited.
It was your first battle too, Corin said.
It was true. The queen had always been protective of him. Don't compare with me.
The prince smiled.
I was raised among the queen's guards,
and destiny cannot be understood, only followed. He nodded toward the cask again. Corin rose and followed. 2. The Ridge. The next morning, Prince Firehelm signaled, and the stone door swung open, letting sunlight pour into the adit of the hideaway. Corin squinted. He was probably the 10th dwarf in line, but the light was still harsh. Firehelm raised a hand. The dwarves rushed out of the adit onto the basalt escarpment and quickly formed a ring, spears and shields raised. Hefter was left within, adequately supplied. His partner, Coldhammer, was dead, but Firehelm had ordered Witherweld to stay with him until help arrived. Witherweld had a laceration on his arm, not bad enough to disable him by any means. Witherweld had served as Firehelm's shield partner. Losing his shield partner would make him more vulnerable in a fight. But then perhaps the prince wanted to take that risk on himself, rather than force it on someone else. Corin had half expected to be asked to stay with Hefter, but he was not going to suggest it. He would not risk being thought a coward, so he kept his mouth shut. Instead, Firehelm directed Corin to take Hefter's shield and axe. Witherweld was armed and would have no difficulty sealing the stone door against any Ursi after the rest of the prince's guard left. From the open escarpment, Corin could see no sign of Ursi besides the tracks left in the dust. He could see the approaches to Hooked Gap to the north, but it looked bare, except for crows lofting on the wind.
Double line, we move south, Firehelm said.
He took the front as the rest broke ring and formed their column. They followed a narrow trail along the ridge, Firehelm setting a sharp pace. Spinner was next to Corin. They were line partners. In any ring or column, Spinner was supposed to be on Corin's left, except that in the turmoil and confusion of the day before, they had gotten separated, and Corin had found himself on the inside of the ring during the fight.
Are we going home?
Spinner asked in a low voice. Do you think? Corin shrugged. He didn't know, nor did he think it was important to know. The prince would lead them. Spinner didn't seem to mind that Corin didn't respond.
Or are we hunting more?
The prince wanted to fight, Corin said.
We did fight. I killed one, Spinner said. Got it by the liver.
He raised his spear. He looked over at Corin.
Get any?
No.
But you brought in Hefter. That was a good act, Spinner said. I didn't think you'd make it back.
Spinner's voice had been rising in volume.
Shh!
Corin hushed him. The pines on the ridge crest were not dense, separated by jumbles of rock and ferns.
but below them there was plenty of tangled pine to hide any number of Ursi. Karin really shouldn't have minded that Spinner was talking to him. Not many others did. But then Karin suspected Spinner probably talked when there wasn't anyone around either. He got his name, Spinner, early on in their training. He had the habit of spinning around every time he missed an axe strike. Too much follow-through. It was a foolishness that Prince Firehelm and One Hand had drilled out of him quickly, but the name stuck. It was mockery of a sort, but Spinner didn't seem to mind. At least he didn't talk any less, which Karin took for the same. They all had nicknames like Spinner, for the dwarves held their true names in secret. Husband and wife would know each other's true names. Parents knew their children's names, but rarely the other way around. On even rarer occasions, the closest of friends or siblings might share their true names. A trust of closest fellowship.
I wish we could block all the passes, Spinner whispered.
Too many passes, too much ground, Karin replied.
I know.
It was true. This was the nearest northerly pass, but 10 miles further was another, and another 5 miles beyond that. 30 years ago, Queen Jade had ordered the pass held one spring. After sniffing out the presence of the dwarves, the Ursi had simply gone west and east, finding other passes and flooding through the wilds. They lost more goats and sheep that year than usual, and more dwarves, what with all the warriors useless up in the pass. Maybe one day they could block up all the passes with fortifications and enough dwarves to spare. But Ursi climbed well, even up steep mountainsides, and nowhere was as safe as underground. But the damn sheep and goats needed protection, and fresh grass to eat, and leaves to browse, and not to be roasted on a spit by a band of Ursi.
At least it means we get to fight, Spinner added.
Karin didn't respond.
What am I even supposed to say?
They followed the ridge south as it sloped down into a wooded vale. The path diverged, and at the fork stood a flat granite stone set on end, with a mix of cave and speaking runes etched on it. The prince turned along the eastern path. Spinner glanced at the waymarker as they passed it.
We're going to Queen's West, he said. 6 miles.
Karin grunted. He hadn't known Spinner could read runes. Maybe they'd just been cave runes. He hadn't looked closely. They kept up an unflagging pace. Karin knew that they would cover the distance to the outpost, even with the uphill climb, in about 2 hours. They'd marched through the caverns all winter carrying packs of rock. And even Karin, probably the slenderest of the company, could make a 6 mile march carrying only weapons, armor, satchel, and flask without fatigue. Karin had spent little besides the mandatory work time on the surface, but he knew enough to recognize that the woods were unusually silent. Normally, rabbits would skitter away in the ferns, squirrels would jump between branches. Apart from the crows, even the birds seemed more subdued than usual. Firehelm raised a hand as he leapt into the ferns on the side of the trail. The double wide column split apart in the center. Karin crouched into the ferns on the right, and Spinner to the left. In 2 heartbeats, the path was clear. The undergrowth engulfed the dwarves. The ferns grew to waist height. It was only necessary to crouch and duck their heads. Sticks snapped further along the path, and Karin smelled the scent of Ursi. The dwarves hid downwind. That was good. Karin had smelled Ursi for the first time only the day before, but he would never forget it or mistake it now. He clenched his hand on the haft of Hefta's axe. He'd kept his heels under him so he could rise at speed. An Ursi howled. The prince yelled. Karin launched himself out onto the path. The Ursi had come within a few yards, and now they jostled together as the Ursi in front stepped back. There were less than 10, Karin gauged, as he
Sample complete. Ready to continue?